Good evening and welcome to Boston University's World of Ideas. I'm Steve Brown. Tonight we have a lecture presented by the Boston University African American Studies Program titled Black Feminist Ethics in Brazilian Social Movements. Our speaker is Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, Assistant Professor of Africana Studies at Brown University. We begin with an introduction by tonight's moderator, Linda Hayward, Director of Boston University's African American Studies Program.
Professor Perry earned her MA and PhD in social anthropology from the University of Texas, Austin in 2005 and is currently Assistant Professor of Africana Studies at Brown University. Her work specializes in Black women's activism, African diaspora studies, critical race and feminist theories, urban geography and politics, and race relations in Latin America and the Caribbean. She has done research in Mexico, Jamaica, Belize, Brazil, Argentina, and the United States. Her most recent work is an ethnographic study of Black women's activism in Brazilian cities, specifically an examination of Black women's participation and leadership in neighborhood associations and the reinterpretations of racial and gender identities in urban spaces. Professor Perry is currently completing a book manuscript entitled Politics Below the Asphalt, Black Women and the Search for Racial Justice, based on the research that she has done. And again, her talk today is Black Feminist Ethics in Brazilian Social Movements. Welcome very much, Professor Khan.
Thank you so much for the very warm welcome, and I would like to thank the faculty of the African American Studies program here at Boston University, and specifically Professors Haywood and Thornton, and especially Ms. Deidre James for organizing my visit, and Janje, who I met today, for setting everything up here in this room. I would like to begin my talk with a popular saying in Brazil, and it's, the washerwoman works with water, bleach, and blue, and I translate blue from a Anil. She just can't remove the dirt from Brazil. And a quote from Afro-Brazilian politician Benedito da Silva, Política é coisa para macho, ouvi isso a vida inteira. So politics is a man's game, I heard that all my life. The above excerpt of a poem written by Afro-Brazilian politician Benedito da Silva, formerly the Brazilian Minister of Social Action, and a neighborhood and women's rights activist in Rio de Janeiro, provides a poignant critique of existing masculinist and classist definitions of political engagement. Silva's rise in Brazilian politics from a domestic worker and neighborhood activist to the federal government suggests that Black women in Brazil have been able to defy social prescriptions and redefine politics not as a man's game, but rather as a robust space for Black women to occupy and lead. Today's talk represents just a segment of my analysis of my book manuscript, which analyzes Black women's struggle in urban neighborhoods against the forced removal of poor Black communities during urban modernization and revitalization processes in Brazilian cities. I centralize the experiences of the women of Gamboa do Baixo, a coastal neighborhood, and this is just a segment of the neighborhood, this is not the entire neighborhood, a coastal neighborhood located in the center of Brazil's northeastern city of Salvador. These activists are still considered to be the unlikely leaders of the grassroots organization in their neighborhood. Black people in Brazil, particularly women, are understood to be apolitical, and their communities are thought to be easy targets for urban renewal without much challenge or organized protest. Although Black women are rarely visible leaders in political parties or in state-level politics, my ethnographic analysis of the Gamboa do Baixo Neighborhood Association and the Neighborhood Association in general in Salvador supports the claim that they're indeed the everyday leaders of their communities. In Brazilian cities, Black women wage very real and arduous political struggles in the marginal spaces they occupy, and their exclusion from broader citywide and national politics does not negate their achievements at the neighborhood level. State officials have heard their voices, and their actions demonstrate that community organizations led by Black women are capable of changing political policies historically rooted in slavery and colonialism. Historians Michael Reed Andrews and Kim Butler suggest that colonialism is at the core of racist ideologies and social stratification in Brazilian cities, including racial segregation, economic, and racialized hierarchies. As Butler writes, urban Black struggles against discrimination in Salvador have emerged to dismantle discrimination against people of African descent. While Afro-Brazilians were able to prevent legalized segregation, they have not been able to escape widespread poverty, a legacy of plantation slavery. As is widely acknowledged, a poverty has a face in Brazil, and the color of that face is black. Grassroots activism in Gamboa de Baixo and throughout the city of Salvador forces us to expand definitions of mass mobilization, as well as to reconsider the multitude of ways in which black women's political actions draw attention to the gendered aspects of Brazilian race relations. This presentation represents a theoretical reflection on black women's key role in social movements in Brazilian cities through a look at how and why women lead the neighborhood associations. The ethnographic data that I've collected over the past decade suggests that female leadership predominates in this case because women play important roles in social and political networks, such as organizing funerals and demanding potable water. It is not difficult to explain why the political meetings in the Gamboa de Baixo neighborhood became known as Coisinha de Mulher, or a woman's little thing. Meetings are widely perceived as what women do in Gamboa de Baixo and other neighborhoods. The uniqueness of women's political mobilization and the leadership roles they have always occupied in the Gamboa de Baixo neighborhood illustrates the place of the bairro, the neighborhood, particularly the social and spatial location of Gamboa de Baixo in the formation of black women's gendered anti-black racism politics focused on issues of urbanization and land rights. This analysis incorporates the voices from activists from Gamboa de Baixo who speak from a social location that reveals the link between the politics of the neighborhood and the workplace. It supports my claim that black women's political work is deeply informed by their knowledge of an entrenched racial and gender hierarchy that provides little economic opportunity for them beyond domestic work, which continues to be one visible reminder of Brazil's neo-slavery attitudes and practices towards black women's work. In this regard, domestic work matters greatly. While my research did not initially focus on these connections between gendered racism, labor practices, and the formation of female-led social movements, I could not ignore activists' consistent testimony of the heightened gender, racial, and class consciousness that arises from their subjugated positions as blacks, women, and workers. From this key insight, I draw upon black feminists and critical race and social movement theories that explain black women's militancy against interlocking forms of oppressions, particularly at the grassroots level, and to centralize the political actions of quem sempre se rebelou contra a servidão, those who always rebelled against servitude. I provide concrete examples of the relationship between systemic racialization and feminization of poverty and the emergence of gendered class-based anti-racism activism throughout the African diaspora. Moreover, social movements have become a crucial site for black women who are not generally expected to reshape policy or to engage in the global transformation of ideologies and practices of modern urban development. To understand the unique development of black women's activism and leadership in Gamboa de Baixo, it is important to outline the neighborhood's recent social and political history and its significance in the center of the city of Salvador. In the 1960s, the technocratic and authoritarian government of the military dictatorship elaborated the Plano Direto, an urban development plan intended to modernize all Brazilian cities. The plan forbade community participation in urban planning and considered poor communities, the majority of which in the city of Salvador were black, to be incapazes de ação e decisão, and that's the exact language they use, which means incapable of taking action and making decisions, right? The government was responsible for the construction of the Contorno Avenue, that runs along the Bay of All Saints, which demolished numerous homes and removed families, some of whom resisted displacement without much success. The road's construction separated Gamboa into two neighborhoods, Gamboa de Cima, Upper Gamboa, and Gamboa de Baixo, Lower Gamboa. That physical separation isolated the fishing colony, Gamboa de Baixo, located below the Contorno Street, and denied the community basic services such as sanitation, electricity, and water. Isolation and abandonment exacerbated unequal social relations between working class Gamboa de Baixo and its bourgeois neighbors above the street. Campo Grande, Vitória, those of you who are familiar with the city of Salvador. The Abertura Democrática, the democratic opening of the military regime in the mid-1970s, and the transnational democratic government of the early 1980s promoted the political participation of poor urban communities such as Gamboa de Baixo. Neighborhood associations became a new political arena for Black communities to engage in struggles for citizenship rights and make urban demands for material resources such as better schooling, housing, and work conditions. Moreover, the growth in grassroots-based political parties such as the Workers' Party established what Brazilian scholar Ruth Correa Leite Cardoso identifies as a new set of new relations between the excluded citizens and the state apparatus, which not only reinvigorated broader political participation, but also heightened class-based expectations in the developing social democracy project. Furthermore, Cardoso states, building autonomous associations endowed a new role. Local neighborhood groups made their demands in ways that revealed their ability to bypass traditional mechanisms of political co-optation. And that this will become important later on in my discussion around ethics. Benedita da Silva affirms that many women leaders in neighborhood movements emerged during these years of military rule, during which the persecution of male organizers was widespread. For women who had previously played a backstage role within the neighborhood association, political leadership became increasingly possible. The Women's Association in Gamboa de Baixo, organized in the 1980s, was one such example of Black women's efforts to mobilize local residents to demand social programs for women in Salvador's impoverished neighborhoods. When the municipal government terminated the free milk programs at the end of the 1980s, the Women's Association stopped functioning as a political representative for the neighborhood. However, after the outbreak of cholera in Bahia in 1992, which caused several deaths in Gamboa de Baixo, the women began to organize themselves again. With the direct assistance of the mayoral office, they founded the organization, which now the Amigos de GG dos Moradores da Gamboa de Baixo, which is the name of the neighborhood association. Like in other Brazilian cities, such as Porto Alegre, João Paulo Baiocchi, a Brazilian sociologist, describes this form of civic engagement as government-induced activism. And Willem Assis explains that the increasing numbers of middle-class, left-wing militants, church activists, and NGOs who understand themselves to be at the service of the movements and as external agents and social articulators played key roles in the formation of popular organizations such as neighborhood associations. However, neighborhood associations like the one that emerged in Gamboa de Baixo have been autonomous organizations that extend from already existing political and social networks within local communities. Led by the women of the neighborhood association, Gamboa de Baixo residents went to radio stations to bring attention to the cholera outbreak and the contamination of their tap water. One important act of protest was their demand that the state test the natural water sources and the public water pipes in their neighborhood. And this is important because there are natural water fountains that actually produce water that comes out of the rocks in the neighborhood. Testing proved that the victims of cholera had died from contaminated water provided by the city and not from the neighborhood's natural water fountains. After these actions, the community received some social services interventions, such as the construction of a chafariz, a central water fountain in the area. During this period, Donna Joana, an elderly Italian nun, conducted social work. So, and this is just an example of in the community school that I'll mention. An elderly Italian nun conducted social work with women in the neighborhood, focusing on sewing and adult and child literacy. From her work, she perceived the necessity of buying land and constructing a permanent space in the neighborhood for these activities, a space that later came to be named the Elementary School and Community Center of Gamboa de Baixo, which is where this meeting is taking place in this photograph. For poor Black women in Gamboa de Baixo, the training courses offer them practical skills necessary to seek employment and advance their education. More important, the school became a regular meeting place where the women of the neighborhood association shared knowledge of the everyday happenings in the neighborhood and articulated social and political concerns about the city, the nation, and the world. The work of Donna Joanna typified the work of elderly nuns such as Dorothy Stang, Sister Dorothy Stang, who was recently killed as a result of her advocacy work in the Amazon, who have used their roles as external agents to propagate ongoing local discussions of global justice issues. With the main issue of water resolved during the early 1990s, the Neighborhood Association remained politically dormant for a few years after the cholera outbreak in Gamboa de Baixo. The resurgence of the Neighborhood Association occurred in 1995 with news of the Contorno Avenue Revitalization Project when news reached Gamboa de Baixo residents. The development project involved the gentrification of the area along the Contorno Avenue to promote tourism activities. The Bahian press then announced that the revitalization project involved the relocation of the families of Gamboa de Baixo to a new housing development located in the distant periphery. As the project received a lot of media attention, the Bahian State Development Agency started to collect demographic information on the homes in Gamboa de Baixo. The residents feared that their relocation was imminent, and hence the community movement against expulsion started out of fear of leaving the locale most of them had known all of their lives. That fear led to anger, and residents reported to newspapers that government social workers were conducting surveys in Gamboa de Baixo without any explanations. Residents suggested that social workers were documenting the conditions of the population for probable expulsion from the urban center. At the end of 1995, the government expelled 75 families from a coastal community situated on the Contorno Avenue, approximately 1 kilometer away from Gamboa de Baixo. Residents watched as the government advanced on their plans, and for those of you who are familiar with Salvador, I'm sure you've seen this beautiful image. So residents watched as the government advanced in their plans to displace all the poor black communities from along the Contorno Avenue. The government conducted a rapid and thorough cleansing of the city center and displaced all the residents from the restored historic buildings and monuments. During 1995 and 1997, community activism focused on getting detailed information about the Contorno Avenue Revitalization Project, mobilizing Gamboa de Baixo residents to participate in street protests and developing alternative urbanization projects for the improvement of their community. Like the Women's Association during the previous decade, the Neighborhood Association found its leadership and support firmly based in the women of Gamboa de Baixo. The women's fear was a crucial factor in pushing forward the grassroots struggle against black clearance and slum clearance in the city center, which is very evident in the historic center named the Pelourinho, for those of you who have gone there. This stemmed from a dozen or so women who began to cause alarm, shouting, "Olha o que está acontecendo, look what's happening." The women worked with non-governmental organizations such as the Commission of Justice and Peace of the Archdiocese of Salvador, CJP, the Center of Social Action Studies, Movimiento Negro Unificado, the United Black Movement, and the Unión de Negros pela Igualdade, Union for Black Equality, UNEGRO, which is the activist that you saw in that photograph, in mobilizing the community and in discussing the global neoliberal roots of citywide revitalization projects. These organizations also contributed significantly to this intellectual and political empowerment of black women in Gamboa de Baixo and shifted class-centered debates on social inequality to include racial and gender oppression. This shift implied alterations in black women's definition of themselves as capable of being leading political actors in urban social movements and contributors to the democratization of Brazilian society. Moreover, the women maintained local autonomy while calling upon leftist NGOs and politicians as resources to decipher their rights as citizens and communities. This relationship between neighborhood associations and NGOs and political parties was crucial for building activists' knowledge of and fight against the destructive and exclusionary practices of urbanization in Salvador. The 1996 Habitat II conference, believe it or not, organized by the United Nations, was also crucial for Brazilian social movements organized around issues of urbanization and housing rights. Political groups like neighborhood associations, the landless movement, and the homeless movement used the Habitat Agenda as a tool for demanding national and state commitment to infrastructural improvement and fair land and housing distribution. Conference discussions centered on marginalized groups, specifically racial minorities, women and children, and the Habitat Agenda held particular meanings for the future development of Brazilian city. And I think at that time had the largest groups of participants in the Habitat 2 conference. I believe it was in Turkey. UNESCO presented a disparaging report on Brazilian cities in which they confirmed the rapid ghettoization is the literal translation, of poor neighborhoods where the majority of their residents were black and poor. The report claimed that these actions resulted in the creation of new frontiers in the city, which is a term that anthropologist, black anthropologist, Deborah Thomas used in her own, her newest work on the creation of these new frontiers in Jamaican cities. But what I've called in my own work as the creation of these peripheries in the urban center. So there's geographic shift in how we understand the periphery. Reflecting this disparity between the spaces where the rich and poor and whites and black live. In Salvador, the government's plan to expand housing on the periphery for families like those from Gamboa de Baixo provoked debates among activists about the systemic elimination of pretos, or black, and pobres, poor people, from the better areas of the city and generated critiques of Brazil's supposed commitment to poverty alleviation, gender justice, and land reform. Right. And part of my argument, overall argument, is that black women became, especially poor black women, are really key to those discussions at that time. Gamboa de Baixo activists used their knowledge of these international debates to advocate for the intervention of Viver Melhor, which is a project translated as Better Living, a federal program of the Brazil Habitat Project, designed after the Habitat 2 conference and responsible for the urbanization of poor communities in the state of Bahia. They were able to incorporate some of their needs into the project and guarantee the construction of 80 new homes, the exclusion of the construction of the road within the neighborhood, or the restoration of the homes that already existed, and the permanence of all families in their place of origin. Today, the Gamboa de Baixo Neighborhood Association continues to fight to achieve their demands for the improvement of houses that were constructed by the government less than 15 years ago, the complete installation of water pipes and sewer system, and environmental reform as well. That includes also land rights. So it's possible to argue that they remain intact as a community, but in a very fragile state, especially as we see continued demolition of barracas, or however, shacks, I don't know what the name of it, on the beach that sell things, as well as coastal communities more generally. As the outline of the Gamboa de Baixo's political history reveals, organizing and leading a grassroots movement against land expulsion and for improved living conditions represents no easy task for community leaders in the Gamboa de Baixo Neighborhood Association. Most meetings and protests conflict with personal and professional responsibilities of the working women, such as 35-year-old activist Hita, who works as a domestic worker from sunrise to sunset and takes care of her own household duties at night. Her dedication to the neighborhood association reflects her willingness to take on the triple duty day as worker, mother, and activist. Managing the domestic and political spheres simultaneously poses a tremendous challenge for this group of women activists. In a class system that regulates black women to the bottom of the socioeconomic hierarchy, domestic workers give special insights into how gendered racism operates in Brazil and the challenges to resisting that racism. Domestic work is the number one form of employment for black women in the country. More than 80% of working adult and adolescent females in the Gamboa de Baixo neighborhood are domestic workers. I attempt to examine how these women carve out political spaces in their everyday lives to organize a resistance movement. There is a situation filled with a very stark contradiction. They carry out the least valuable and most dehumanizing forms of work on a daily basis, and yet they are the predominant leaders of Gamboa de Baixo's community politics. I recall that in 2003, at a board meeting I attended of the Gamboa de Baixo Neighborhood Association, Hita, who I mentioned previously, recounted the story of the work conditions in the home of a wealthy Bahian musician who lived in the elite coastal Rio Vermelho neighborhood. At that time, it was a few days before Christmas, and Rita sadly remarked that her employer told her that he would not pay her the federal mandated 13th month year in salary. And I guess the 13th salary is just an extra salary. It sounds complicated the way I'd phrase that. Fully expecting and anticipating the extra money, she asked the other Neighborhood Association board members what her legal rights were as a domestic worker and whether this category of workers traditionally received the extra salary. Her boss had already refused to sign her worker's card, which left her without any legal recourse, and he was paying her below the minimum wage requirement. As Rita claimed, there were three generations living in the household, and there was a lot of hard work. She hand-washed the clothes of five adults, as well as those of two children. Like most domestic workers, she complained that she suffered from acute back pains from the cleaning and ironing, and that her hands were raw from all the washing. They can afford to buy a washing machine, Rita affirmed, but like most Bahians, they prefer to have their clothes washed by hand even today. Black women provide available and cheap labor, cheap labor alternative to the expensive new technologies that make domestic work easier. Being cheated out of a fair salary was a usual complaint of domestic workers in Bahia that led to the political organization of the Domestic Workers Union of Bahia and the Washerwomen's Union during recent decades. A more common complaint of domestic workers is employers' refusal to pay the necessary Social Security taxes, obstructing workers' ability to receive retirement benefits after many years of work. Anna Cristina, the then 33-year-old resident of the Bodebaixo neighborhood and former association board member, after hearing Rita's story, told of her own mother's enduring struggle to retire, even though her hands were severely damaged from years of hand washing. Anna Cristina also admitted that as an adolescent and young woman, she worked as a domestic worker in her white sister's house in Gamboa de Baixa for several years without receiving a salary. And we can talk more about how that might be the case, that she's black and her sister is white, but I won't get into that discussion. Working in that household provided her with shelter and food, as well as the freedom to move about her neighborhood and to participate in community politics. However, Anna Cristina perceived her unpaid labor as a form of racial exploitation common to other black domestic workers in Gamboa de Baixo and throughout Salvador. A discussion about what Rita should do about her exploitative working conditions erupted during the Neighborhood Association meeting. Hichinha, a social worker from the Social Center for Social Action Studies, suggested that they contact a lawyer, and Rita said that she was already planning not to return to work with families after the holiday. And in the longer version, I talk a little bit about how Robin Kelly used these kinds of work stoppage to understand resistance. The women of the Gamboa de Baixo Neighborhood Association regularly confront the police fearlessly and shout in the face of state officials during meetings and group demonstrations, but they struggle with individual empowerment to overcome the oppressive conditions they deal with in other aspects of their lives. As Anna Cristina reminded Rita during the meeting, the Gamboa de Baixo struggle is not just about the empowerment and improvement of the neighborhood, but also about reinventing themselves as black women and realizing their own projeto de vida, or their own political and their own personal life projects. The incident that Rita describes raises the question of how and why women like her have been able to mobilize on a collective basis in their communities around issues of housing and land rights, but have not been able to resist on an individual level at the workplace or even at home. In addition to tales of everyday struggles for fair salaries, accounts of employers who make sexual advances or even sexually exploit young, attractive Gamboa girls are commonplace. Although women tell me the various ways that they try to resist these kinds of exploitation, the vast majority continue to work under difficult circumstances, do not participate in domestic workers' unions, and are not registered with the Brazilian government as formal workers. They're oftentimes unaware that the union exists or that there are certain rights guaranteed to workers in their profession, even when working without legal documentation. To my knowledge, no woman in the Gamboa de Baixo neighborhood is affiliated with a domestic workers union or a union that addresses their needs in general, for that matter. This category of black women workers in Bahian society are oftentimes disposable and rendered invisible and is not valued as real work. Poor women throughout the country are usually afraid to resist because domestic work is the only kind of job that they can find. Patricia Hill Collins, in her groundbreaking text, Black Feminist Thought, Knowledge, Consciousness, and Empowerment, writes that U.S. black women's critical social theory lay in the common experiences they gained from their jobs. According to Collins, forging strong familial ties with their white employers, black women construct insider relationships. However, these women witness and understand racism firsthand and know that while they find themselves navigating the intimate terrains of white people's lives, they could never belong to white families. And I immediately start to think of The Help, the movie, the book. In fact, Collins state that domestic workers remain outsiders within socially and economically marginalized from white society. She argues that black women who work as domestics maintain not only relations within their all-black communities, but also develop complex relationships within the homes where they work. Navigating the homes of white families on a daily basis, they belong as workers, but they are permanent economic and social outsiders within. In another essay, Collins emphasized that black women are never like one of the family, right? Despite the book and the film shows. And despite the general discourse in Brazil. And it's interesting that I got this text that she wrote, like one of the family, translated to Portuguese, and it's gotten some interesting response. But black women are never like one of the family, which reflects how racial and gender power operates within the private realm of domestic work. This form of social organization also indicates the form, the politics of containment, which for black women marked with the status of subordinated workers means that they are tolerated as long as they remain in their prescribed places. And I know all of my friends are domestic workers in Salvador, and they all say that if their employers see them in the street well-dressed, they almost can't, it's almost that they can't recognize them or they don't acknowledge them. At this, which, you know, I have that same issue. I don't get recognized off campus. So at the same time, domestic workers gain access to the particularities of racial ideologies and practices that they take back to their home spaces and share with each other, thereby developing a collective social critique of gender, class-based racism, and many other feminist scholars have talked about this division between work and home. This understanding of black women's standpoint, constructed from their experiences as social outsiders in their places of work, elucidates the collective action of black women in Brazilian urban communities. In Gamboa de Baixo, the knowledge black women gain as domestic workers is a source of political empowerment as well as organizing creativity. Women like Rita might not overtly resist against their employers' actions, but they share their critiques with other women in the neighborhoods and spaces like that of the neighborhood association meeting. Understanding that colonialism and racism are the root causes of their exploitation, these black women contemplate collective ways to overcome that exploitation and transform society. Still, a lot of these formulations, those feminist formulations of black women's standpoint theory does not explain the relative lack of political action in the workplace. The case of Gamboa de Baixo offers a possible explanation of the relationship between work and political identity formation in Brazil. In cities like Salvador, labor organizations, and this is what I consider to be the primary problem, and even the problem people are having even with the Workers' Party in Brazil, labor organizations rarely concern themselves with racial justice and housing rights, which is at the core of black urban experiences. This absence of a class consciousness that includes the racialized poor discourages black communities from organizing around a shared class position only. From this perspective, black women in Gamboa de Baixo prefer to mobilize as moradores, residents of a neighborhood, not as trabalhadores or workers. In their neighborhood organizations, black women link their class positions as poor workers to their racial and gender conditions in a structurally unequal city. They understand that they are poor because they are black women, experienced through their heightened racial and gender sensibilities at work and at home. They self-identify as residents of an urban neighborhood under siege by the police, development agencies, and private companies because Gamboa de Baixo is preto y pobre, black and poor. The neighborhood, unlike the workplace, is an important site of political autonomy and liberation for poor black women in Salvador's urban communities. They fight to preserve the land where they have built their homes, for social networks, and generated material resources necessary to sustain their families. Black women workers in Gamboa de Baixo continue to represent the majority of board members and primary actors in meetings and street protests. The female-centered space of the neighborhood association has not allowed for male leadership and domination to flourish, raising concerns about the way gendered racial hegemony operates and its effect on grassroots politics. Helen Davis writes that one aspect of hegemony points to the subordinated class's willingness to collude and negotiate with the dominant power bloc. When most politicians approach neighborhood groups to garner votes, they almost always approach male residents, some of whom have bargained with the state for personal gain, such as political appointments. In contrast, black women leaders of neighborhood associations have been unwilling to negotiate on an individual basis because they see the community's collective interests as congruent with their own. This represents a crucial aspect of why female-led organizations tend to be relatively successful in preserving collective community rights such as access to land and improved social conditions. Black feminist scholars in the U.S. and Brazil have argued that these kinds of moral and ethical principles stem from women's experiences in religious institutions and underline their ideological position in black political struggle. And I cite Patricia Hill Collins again here, and she writes, "This moral, ethical tradition, especially as expressed within black Christian churches, encourages black women to relinquish their special interests as women for the greater good of the overarching community, rejecting individualist strategies that they perceived as selfish. Black women came to couch their issues as black women within the egalitarian, collectivist ideological framework of black women's community work, an approach that works well within womanist approaches to black women's politics. Within this interpretive framework, fighting for freedom and social justice for the entire black community was, in effect, fighting for one's own personal freedom. The two could not be easily separated." This echoes Afro-Brazilian feminist Jerema Werneck, who asserts that black women's morality informed by Afro-Brazilian religious traditions, also heavily female-dominated. And this is important because these communities, religious communities, also are dominant in neighborhoods. So they're a religious institution as well as they represent neighborhood leadership, encourages women to abandon their special interests and fight on behalf of the entire community. For activists in Gamboa de Baixo, they see the collective community interest as coinciding with their own individual needs as poor black women. And this is, in the case of Gamboa de Baixo, geographically important because they actually have a beach and they actually have their own candomblé ceremony, which is significant to their community identity. These collective interests are maintained even when female community leaders work with the few politicians who have supported the neighborhood's cause against land expulsion. In many Brazilian neighborhoods, local residents tend to see politicians as aproveitadores, or users, or as those who take advantage of them. I couldn't find a better translation for aproveitadores, or as those who take advantage of the material desperation of poor communities during the electoral process to garner votes. Reflecting the general perception of black residents of Salvador's poorest neighborhoods, Gamboa de Baixo activists expressed that they have little confidence in the politicians who claim to represent the interests of local communities, including leftist politicians, on the one hand, but also support public policies that evict blacks from urban land on the other. This critical relationship between the Gamboa de Baixo neighborhood and politicians provides an example of activist rejection of class reductionism. This is particularly true with politicians who organize around class interests, but do not include race and gender in their analyses, claiming that they benefit poor black women workers and their urban neighborhoods. In conclusion, In 2004, a group of mostly male Swiss graduate students visited Gamboa de Baixo to learn about grassroots organizing in Salvador and throughout Brazil. After traveling to other parts of Brazil, including the Amazonian region, they were greeted by a group of female community leaders in Gamboa de Baixo. I served as the translator for the Swiss group, and many asked questions about the age and gender of the local activists. In large part, the activists were comprised of young women like Lou, a woman in her early 20s, and Ana Cristina in her early 30s. Shocked, to say the least, the students commented that they had expected older men to be at the forefront of the movement. In fact, they had brought with them a masculine Swiss watch to present to the Neighborhood Association's president, who they had expected to be male. When presenting the gift, they apologized, and I'm the translator, they apologized for their assumptions and expressed that the female leadership and participation challenged their own internalized social prescriptions of women's political agency. Furthermore, they stated that to see black women in these positions of leadership was a brave defiance of the overt racism they were surprised to have witnessed during their trip to Brazil. With knowledge of social movements in indigenous and black communities, their previous conceptions of Brazil's racial democracy had been shattered. Moreover, one man expressed in an emotional tale, again, I'm the translator, having previously been bombarded by the negative, over-sexualized representations of black women as prostitutes in Europe, female-led political mobilizations in Brazil made him face his own racism and sexism. The above description of European male visitors to Gamboa exemplifies the global perception of black women and the lack of knowledge on black women's politics throughout the African diaspora. While it is difficult to believe that their experiences on one day in Gamboa de Baixo might have completely changed their individual and collective views of black women, my understanding of this global invisibility of black women was heightened. Though black women have been key figures in black liberation struggles worldwide, the likes of Fannie Lou Hamer, Louisa May, Lelio Gonzalez, and Emily Jack Garvey, and many others have been ignored. Thus, sexist and racist notions of black women's ability to produce political knowledge and lead political organizations are reproduced. Defined expectations of their roles as workers, mothers, fisherwomen, divers, and activists, the political assertion of poor women in Gamboa de Baixo has been particularly disruptive to the usual social and political order in Salvador. Black women who represent the largest numbers in domestic work are viewed on a daily basis as subservient, submissive, and obedient. In fact, the only black women that most of the elite whites who govern the city ever interact with, often throughout their lifetimes, are the housekeepers and babysitters who work in their homes. For black women, and even the former president, Cardozo said, you know, in the whole one foot in the kitchen, the only kind of black women that he's interacting with. For black women to occupy a dominant political space in meetings and protests as leaders of their communities challenges prevalent disparaging stereotypes of poor black women and forces us to consider them as important agents of social change. The experiences of Gamboa de Baixo show that neighborhood associations represent an important space, The experiences of Gamboa de Baixo show that the neighborhood association represents an important political space for black women to assert their local power and leadership. Just like interpersonal skills, such as removing your neighbor's clothes from the line when it starts to rain, the neighborhood association is a visible example of just how the personal and the political mingle at the community level. Organizing in the neighborhood enacts radical social change from the home place where black people live, work, and play. Furthermore, as leaders of these kinds of organizations, black women bring to the forefront their unique ideas and methods of social protest that expand our knowledge of racial and gender consciousness at all levels of society. Gamboa de Baixo activists organize as blacks, women, and poor people, leading to a more expansive definitions of black womanhood and social movements on a global scale. Moreover, the ethnographic examples from the Gamboa de Baixo Neighborhood Association show that black women's political actions constitute a continuation of their everyday acts of community building. The participation of women in grassroots organization is not an anomaly, but visible female leadership continues to be sparse in most neighborhood associations. I emphasize that domestic workers are key to the development of female leadership as a result of their knowledge, gained as outsiders within. My argument also supports the idea that these women have common interests as workers, but their work experience affects the maintenance of their home spaces. More importantly, poor Black women choose to organize as residents of their neighborhoods rather than as workers because they understand that the dominance of domestic work, oppressive at its core, should not be preserved. In their social movement to improve their neighborhood, they demand improvement in social conditions, in their social conditions, primarily for access to education that will prepare them for other areas of employment. Furthermore, there are gender differences in grassroots organizing, which impacts the outcome of negotiations with the state. From the experiences of the Gamboa Bayashore activists, I conclude with this presentation with the assertion that their relative success is a result of their reluctance to deal with the state individually and their preference for collective social transformation. As Black feminist theorists such as Kara Bowes-Davies and Louisa Bayhos have argued, Kara Bowes-Davies' interpretation of Claudia Jones, have argued women activists in Black liberation struggles have worked for the collective benefit of their communities. The challenge remains, however, how to negotiate between personal and communal transformation as part of their overall personal project. This challenge reflects a complex relationship of gender and racial oppression that Black women experience as invisible workers while underlining their vision for liberation from this form of enslavement. Thank you very much.
So much for that stimulating presentation, and I couldn't help, in fact, throughout your lecture, thinking about our most famous community organizer, which is President Obama, and wondering whether, in fact, at the point at which he enters into community organizing with a degree from our neighborhood school here, Harvard, you know, and sort of. There he is. How were there women? Have this type of work been done in America? The way in which, in fact, male leadership comes to frame the way we hear about community organizing. Sure, we've heard of Hammy Loafer, but this was, you know, during the civil rights. And, you know, we have a different type of kind of a impoverished communities now, and the type of organizing that, in fact, bring that to the fore and the way in which it interfaces with the state or with agencies at different levels. So I'm wondering if you have some, if you intend to do comparative work, if comparative work have been done, and how in the U.S., you know, male community organizing is in fact one way of getting to state power and federal, you know, power at the very highest level. And women are still very much marginalized in the American case.
Okay. It's interesting because I actually teach a course on urban politics in the United States, right? I don't necessarily write about it, but the teaching has definitely helped me to think through a lot of these issues. What I've found in generally is that oftentimes for Black politicians, grassroots organizing becomes the primary vehicle through which they ascend to in terms of for political recognition and access to party politics and power. And I think we see that in the case of Obama. In the Brazilian context, I don't think it's any different. I think that almost all politicians that have Black politicians that have gained some a form of power have come up through specifically grassroots organizing and the Black movement. So even the current Benedita da Silva is a good example, and now the current minister of, I forgot the name of the organization, CEPIR, which is against racial inequality. It's a tricky ministry, to say the least, in terms of resources. But certainly she comes out of the Black movement. The problem is that she's rare, and they're already trying to kick her out. And Benedita Silva also didn't last very long. But what you see more so is that even with the grassroots organization, the neighborhood level, to then also participate in the Black movement, is that you see more and more these Black women, Black men who are leaving behind the local organization at the level of the BIHO to then, for example, gain resources for college education, then become a kind of an assistant to a leftist politician, to then kind of keep on going. But I think what ends up happening is that, one, there oftentimes, I think there's a little bit of negotiation that takes place that is oftentimes to the detriment of the original political project. And I think that's what a lot of these women have argued, is that something has to give, and what ends up giving is the community itself in the process of negotiating to access to a job. So what you find in Salvador, there are a lot of these assistants, asesores, to the leftist politicians that play the role of interlocutor between the politician who needs vote in order to keep his position and the communities that have their own particular interests, and they have these people who are now civil servants who play the relationship, between these two groups of people. But what ends up happening is that some people lose in the process. So there are actual examples that I cite in my book of neighborhoods who are displaced because the negotiation happens behind the scene. Someone gets a job, someone gets a position, and ultimately they do what people say, they vende, at least vende na comunidade, so they sell the community for individual advancement. But another thing that happens, I make the argument, is that Black women are so marginalized in every regard. So they're not just geographically marginalized in the way that I've conceived of it in terms of this periphery in the center of the city, but they're also poor. They're also probably not as educated, that they're not necessarily considered to be viable political agents anyway. So even when they're approached, they're not necessarily approached to ever become any sort of interlocutor or ever to achieve any sort of political access, because they're not even conceived as being political agents or even to have any political potential by virtue of who they are as poor Black women. So I think that the gender comes into play in the sense that the possibility of men kind of garnering some power, Black men, is possible. Black women are the marginalized of the absolute marginalized. So they don't even see what there is to gain.
We have to thank you so much for a fascinating discussion.
Thank you.
This is Boston University's World of Ideas. You've just heard a lecture by Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, Assistant Professor of Africana Studies at Brown University. Dr. Perry's lecture was titled Black Feminist Ethics in Brazilian Social Movements and was presented by the Boston University African American Studies Program. Tonight's moderator was African American Studies Program Director Linda Haywood. For a CD of Boston University's World of Ideas, call 1-800-909-9287. That's 800-909-9287. You may also go to our website, WBUR.org, to hear archived editions of this and all other WBUR programs. Tonight's program was produced by Mike Toda and Michael Garth with help from Paul Vikas. The executive producer of Boston University's World of Ideas is Peter Lydodes. I'm Steve Brown. Thanks for joining us.